The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Friday, we call it the bonus show. Gary, how are you?
Not bad at all. Not bad at all. Good night in D.C.
Off the face off, the Capitals have won it. The capital of the country is the capital of the hockey playoffs. They rush out onto the ice to congratulate Braden Holtby. The Washington Capitals, for the first time in their 44-year history, are the Stanley Cup champions.
Now, that Kenny Albert there from NBC. Thanks to NBC for that. Now, as we know, nobody cares about hockey.
Right.
Everybody pretends to care about hockey, you know, when their team gets to the Stanley Cup and all that. But look at the television ratings. When you look at the television ratings, you realize nobody cares about hockey. But what we can do is we can spend the next week, 2 weeks, month, 2 months discussing whether they will go around the corner to the White House.
The answer is no. The team from the nation's capital will not be traveling across the street.
That's reading Scott Rasmussen's column today, which was like, oh man, this is just so ridiculous. the time that we spend on these topics, and we've talked about this many times, that and we even see that it happening in the conservative media. You know, we cover all the topics,
right?
And we cover all the important ones, and you know, we tend and we make it known. We tend, you know, I know what I prefer to talk about more is economic things than anything else. That's really my favorite thing to talk about, because that's really drives the engine for everything. So,
Sure. You
know, you and I mentioned how you know, all the name calling over the last couple of weeks seemed to take the top shelf of the headlines and the news stories out there, even in much of the conservative media, and things like tariffs have been almost completely untouched. Not positive stories, not negative stories, more just ignoring it completely.
Yeah.
From quite a few conservative outlets out there, which surprised us a little bit, and we've asked the question why, and it's like, well, nobody even wants to deal with that question of why they haven't seen that, which I find interesting. But congrats to the Capitals out there. Everybody knows I love hockey, but this is the first year ever I did not see not one hockey game from any team. I did catch about 10 minutes, as I said, of a part of it about a week ago, but the first time in my life. It's really interesting, because who were we reading the other day that said just don't care about the NFL anymore? And I've told you, and everybody knows what a big sports fan I am. And really, except for, I turned on golf yesterday because I saw Phil Mickelson was in second place at the Memphis tournament, you know, warming up for the U.S. Open. I can still watch golf. Golf's on in the background quite a bit, but really, I don't watch any baseball. I don't watch football anymore. I watch some college football. I watched the college basketball this year. But really, no more hockey. I haven't watched, you know, what the NFL, and, you know, didn't watch them at all last year.
Right.
Actually, the beginning of the season I did. But it's not just the, I want to make this clear, not just the anthem thing. I don't know whether I'm just getting older. It's like, I don't care anymore. Now, could it be the fact that, for example, it was mentioned on NBC last night that this was the Washington Capitals' first sports championship since... Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to move on to something else. I don't want to
talk about that. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the reason I don't want to talk about that is maybe why I've lost my interest in sports.
Since what?
Since the Redskins beat the Bills in the Super Bowl.
Oh, okay.
So maybe that's one of the reasons. Maybe that's why. Maybe I am coming from a unique point of view as to why sports no longer thrills me as much.
Did you...
After watching them for 40, 45, 50 years.
Hey, did you hear about the guy at the White House the other day that called another guy a Cowboys fan? I'm just trying to take it off of the Bills.
Yeah, thank
here.
You. Yeah, okay. that really...
Thanks. You're welcome.
Well, that's the great thing. See, with the teams that I've always rooted for, mm-hmm. I never have to worry about getting involved in that emotional argument of whether or not they will go to the White House. I don't have to deal with that.
No. The Bills will never go to the White House.
Sabres will never go. Unless
somebody retires from the Bills and runs for president and wins.
Well, you know...
The closest we ever got to that was Jack Kemp.
Jack Kemp.
Yeah. Right?
it's like Jack
so
Kemp.
It could happen. that'd be funny. Someone wins an election. I refuse to go to the White House. But you just won. You're the president. You have to go. Oh, dang it. Is that what that means?
Well, he wouldn't have been in the White House because he was close.
No, he was getting close. If someone in the future wins.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I was saying that's the closest we've ever gotten, but
right.
Can you imagine someone, the activists have gotten so crazy, they win the election. I will not serve in the White House after Trump's been in it. But you won. I don't care.
Trump was in the White House. We're not going to use the White House anymore.
We won't. It's not usable. Okay. It's just insane. I can see that happening. I can see in it wouldn't be the person that wins. It would be some like offshoot candidate, you know, and I'm not going to serve in the White House because Trump served there. I'm going to serve on the ground with what are you going to stand on the street?
Howard Schultz, if I win, I will not serve in the White House.
I'll serve inside of a Starbucks.
Will be the official White House.
And I won't have to buy anything.
I want to buy these. Right.
I can do it for free.
And everybody's allowed into the White House at any time.
Exactly. He opens the bathrooms of the White House. Oh, that would be pleasant.
Oh, man. Oh, this is just too much. It's really too much
fun. That's how crazy it's getting.
But it's good to see that yesterday things got back to normal in the NFL.
Uh-huh.
There's some normalcy back in the NFL. That was good to see yesterday where T.O. said,
I'm not going to go
to my own induction ceremony in the Hall of Fame.
Right. Exactly. I love it.
Funny thing is, I turn on ESPN. They're screaming left and right. I'm laughing. I'm laughing the whole time.
Yeah.
Apparently, my perspective as I get older on sports has changed just a little bit.
Just a little.
Because I'm laughing, saying, wow, that's perfect. I mean, that's T.O. all the way. He didn't give a reason, but so we are only left to speculate if you mm-hmm. don't give a reason. It's like the whole spy thing.
Right.
Spy versus, was he a spy or an undocumented campaign worker?
Right.
Thanks, Pete from Lombard, Illinois, who came up with that yesterday, that no, this whole thing, spy informant, no, there was no spy. Undocumented campaign worker.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pete.
Thank you.
And we said we would credit Pete with that because it got us laughing an awful lot. But, when all this stuff going on, to get back to the normalcy of T.O. saying, I'm not going to go, we can only speculate that if it wasn't a Hall of Fame ceremony, just for him alone, without any other players, he wasn't going to go. We're only left to speculate because he didn't give a reason.
Yeah. Because he wants the attention for himself. He loved the attention all those years when he wasn't getting inducted, you know, because he could be, you know, the victim. He could cry about not getting inducted. And now what did he say in his statement? I will be announcing when and where, you know, at a future date, I'll be announcing when and where I'm going to be celebrating my induction.
Nobody cares.
Well, here's the thing. It's not the induction. That's not the induction. I mean, you can celebrate your induction, but my question is the media going to show up just for him? He's standing out in his, you know, friend's backyard.
I'm going to
six. They hired a clown and a pony.
I'm going to Six Flags,
yes,
and that's where I'm going to celebrate
my
induction into the Hall of Fame.
Right. I mean, you know, he's sitting down at Red Lobster. I'm celebrating. Yay. It's just ludicrous, but that's classic T.O., though.
So
he doesn't want to be lost in the mix, I think.
I mean, that was good. Now we're not, you know, we're moving away from, you know, the whole national anthem thing and the patriotism and getting back to just pure solid individual ego and narcissism.
Yes.
Which is where we like to get back to in the NFL.
Right.
Let's take the national anthem stuff away, the patriotism away, all that stuff. Let's not worry about that for a while. Let's get it back to what we're used to in the NFL, which is pure narcissism.
Yes.
From the huge egotistical players.
It's just crazy. You know?
Oh, man, it's just so much fun.
Yeah, it is.
Well, coming up on the show today, going after the leakers. Mm. We'll get to that. President Trump to skip a portion of the G7 summit concerning climate change and the environment. The Inspector General Watchdog sets next week as a release date. Did you see, read the Cheryl Atkinson's tweet yesterday saying nothing's really going to come out of this because, look, everybody thinks that the Inspector General and the Watchdog does the right thing. Well, I've gotten nowhere on my Freedom of Information Act to find out what the Justice Department, did to me when it comes to, she believes, you know, the Obama administration spying on her. She said, so I have no confidence. They'll just go to whatever looks like they've done some kind of job, but they really won't get to the heart of the matter is what she believes.
Well, we wondered about the report that said James Comey, as FBI director, was insubordinate. And we said, okay, but what does that mean?
What does that mean, right?
And what would be, you know, what would the IG report, how bad would it look? What, he didn't follow protocol, you know, because it should have been the announcement, that July 5th announcement, no reasonable prosecutor announcement, should have been Sally Yates. But what does that mean, that he was directed not to do it and he did it anyway? Or did it mean that he just didn't follow protocol and did something out of the ordinary, which could be construed as insubordination? I take insubordination as the way I guess I read it in that story was about not following directions, a directive from a superior. But we don't know that. And yeah. I don't know why, but I it just doesn't seem, I guess from the leaked story this week about it, it doesn't seem like he's like the IG report's going to be much. So I wasn't really surprised by Cheryl's column on that.
Spy versus undocumented campaign staffer debate continues, where there is no debate on the substance of the issue that somebody was in the Trump campaign,
right,
but just the semantics of the word spy. So that coming up here. Who is paying for Dennis Rodman to go to the North Korea, almost said North Carolina, North Korea summit? We'll have that. Pelosi says Medicare for all will be evaluated if the Democrats win the House. You know why I think that's interesting?
Hmm.
Because if the Democrats win the House,
hmm,
and they come up with a plan for Medicare for all, could they get Trump aboard?
I think there's probably better chance of getting Trump aboard than any other Republican president in the past. Yeah. I mean, because that's, you're getting closer to that single payer. I mean, it would evolve very quickly, I think, in the
Well, as we have said, if the longest issue that he has held on to, you know, from or the early 1980s is tariffs.
Right.
You know, he's always been a tariff kind of person. I was reading from one of the EU commissioners, trade commissioners yesterday, who said that they offered on all industrial products, everything, to have no tariffs on either side whatsoever is what you'd want to get to from
right.
Somebody like that. They said Trump turned them down on it.
Yeah.
And as I've said, the belief now from Mexico, from the EU, from some Republicans now, and Mexico and Canada, is that Trump really doesn't want any free trade agreements. He wants to tariff the country is what they believe.
Hmm.
He believes that the United States putting tariffs on everything and having a much more isolated economy is the way to go. That's the fear right now, is that Trump truly doesn't want a better negotiating position on a trade deal Because as we've asked, what does that mean? And nobody will give us that answer.
Right. What does better mean?
Yeah, what is...
What are you trying to change?
What does better mean? And as Canada said, look, Canada came out yesterday and said, look, you got a steel... You have a steel surplus with us. You produce more steel for us. Why would you want to put tariffs on it? You have a trade surplus with Canada last year, according to the U.S. Trade Representative, of $8.4
billion. Yeah.
Well, why do you want a tariff if you've got a surplus with us? And that's the whole thing that's confusing so many people, is he's all over the place. And then, as we've talked about when it came to China a couple of weeks ago, talking about protecting China jobs, you wonder what in the world is going through this president's head. And the president, a story yesterday in the Wall Street Journal, where the president really, you know, he was the talk of some of the talk inside the White House was him not going to the G7 summit at all because he doesn't personally want to get involved in the discussion of the tariffs.
Well, because, you know, he knows he's going to get, you know, everybody essentially is going to be on him about that.
Well, I mean not even in the G7 summit, but outside of it, he does not want to be discussing himself about the tariffs. And my question would be, well, why not?
Why not?
Just a trade just a trade representatives or his underlings to do it. We believe that, you know, this is such a huge issue. You should go directly to the American people and back up why you're doing what you're doing, and then answer all the specific questions, you know, that are coming. By the way, the Republicans still trying to go forward and still using it as a threat that we're going to attach. We wish to limit, your power because we gave you the power. We gave the executive branch the power when it came to national emergencies to regulate trade deals. This is not a national emergency.
Right.
Many Republicans and conservatives believe that the president is abusing his executive power by saying it's a national security issue when nobody has even tried to make that defense from inside the White House. That's the interesting thing. Nobody's tried to make that case.
Right.
You can't make that case.
No.
So Alice Marie Johnson, whose sentence was commuted, says she will make President Trump proud. I'm just stating that because I knew when that story came out, it had to drive the left crazy. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. It's the Friday show, which means it's the bonus show, which simply means we do 5 hours a night, 5 days a week, which is 25 hours. Average show does a 3-hour show, 5 days a week. That's 15 hours, which means by the time we get to the fifth day, it's a bonus.
That's why they're average and we're not.
Yes. So, and since we do it overnight, that even makes it tougher.
Yeah, it does. A lot tougher.
Yes. We have to sacrifice a lot.
It's a challenge.
Coming up here in just a little bit, going after the leakers. Really interesting story about the ex-Senate Intel panel security director indicted for allegedly lying to the FBI about contact with reporters. We'll get to that coming up.
For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
Most of the nation's rainfall today will be from I-29 on the eastern edge of North and South Dakota and Nebraska over to I-75. The heaviest rain will be located in northeastern Missouri, southeastern Iowa, as well as central Illinois and Indiana. And we could see severe thunderstorms possible from the front range of the northern central Rockies into the central plains and mid-Mississippi Valley for the next several days. Weather for Saturday's Belmont Stakes, a 50-50 chance of rain outside New York City. But back to today, Washington, D.C. will be sunny and 86 tomorrow and Sunday showers. Atlanta, pop-up storms, high 90. New Orleans, sunny 93. Clear in Dallas, 96. Denver, 95 today, 96 tomorrow. On Sunday, 97, we'll be back to 87 degrees in the Mile High City, but not until Monday. And there's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
The Bona Show.
And he's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, the biggest story that really hasn't been covered, the biggest story is the Belmont Stakes is on Saturday, right? Now, bear with me. You're saying, come on, Gary, we put up and up with your golf talk. Bear with me here. There is a payoff. The Belmont Stakes is on Saturday.
Right.
Justify could become the 13th horse in history to claim the Triple Crown. New York Times came out with a story yesterday. Windstar Farms, of course, one of North America's leading thoroughbred racing and breeding operations, according to the New York Times, owns 60% of Justify's breeding rights. China Horse Club owns 25%. A third group is a secretive entity that holds the remaining 15%. Who are they? The SF Bloodstock and SF Racing Group, an international breeding and racing operation, started in 2008. Executives from that investment firm oversee the breeding and horse ownership businesses. What does SF stand for? Soros Fund. George Soros owns 15% of Justify.
All right.
Which brings us to the question, if Justify wins, this is the only question that matters, if Justify wins the Belmont Stakes and therefore the Triple Crown, will George Soros go to the White House?
Can you bring a horse into the Oval Office? Just asking a question.
I'm trying to think, was there a Mr. Ed episode where he went to the White House?
There might be.
Hello, Wilbur. So that the New York Times broke that story yesterday, that breaking story, which I'm sure we're all concerned about.
Well, so
except
here's question two.
A bunch of people, lose.
If Justify gets the Triple Crown, does the president tweet about it?
Congratulations to George Soros.
Or if Justify doesn't get the crown, does the president tweet about it? Oh, this could be a fun weekend.
Yeah, I know.
Now, he'll be at G7. He's coming home early, though.
Yes, he doesn't want to be a part of the climate change or environment.
Yeah. So at that point, it becomes, when he leaves, it's the G6.
Well, he will have an assistant there. So
We'll have representation there.
We will have representation there.
I think you're going to come home early, bring everybody. everybody from the entire delegation. Everyone, get up.
By the way,
walk out.
Right, I read the story the other day. It says remote Quebec. I'm like, well, okay, I guess so. I mean,
remote Quebec.
Unless you're right in the middle of the. You know, is it in Montreal specifically? I'm not sure. But they said,
I don't know.
I mean, most of Canada is remote.
Well, that's a good point.
And I'm not insulting it. That's not an insult.
But
it's
one of those. I don't know what's the facility that they're going to be at. Actually, I don't know. I didn't see that. But I could see one of those really cool, you know, posh hotels.
Well, I mean, the president is a little ticked because it is Quebec, and so he's been told he has to speak French. I'm making that up. Somebody's going to believe that. I heard it on Red Eye Radio. They said the president's going to be forced to speak French. I made that up. That is fake news.
You know what's interesting, though, is that with past presidents, you've seen them, like President Bush spoke Spanish. And you've seen presidents speak, usually it's Spanish, a second language. They might say it, I don't know, when it's usually while they're abroad. Just say a couple of sentences in Spanish. Does President Trump know any other languages? I mean, you would think from all of his world travel that he would, right? No, some. I know he knows Russian. But outside of that, wouldn't that be funny? If there is a Putin summit, President Trump,
that was a good line.
Gives an address.
He knows Russian.
He gives an address in Russian. Oh, that would drive the liberals crazy. They would be all over that. That would be great. That would be great.
That would be.
Yeah, that would be hilarious. But I don't know if the president speaks any other languages.
Let's head to you.
Why not?
It's the bonus show, so why not?
Sure.
So let's head to Canada. And Mark in Ontario, Canada, who is a U.S. citizen, though. Mark, mm-hmm. Welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, gentlemen. First time calling in, and I'm driving actually back to Michigan from Toronto tonight, and I'm listening to the program. But you just made a comment, and I missed it. I'm on hold. You said most of Canada is blank. I didn't hear what the comment was.
Rural.
Remote.
Yeah. Remote. Okay. Right, excuse me. Remote. Remote. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. That probably is true. Yeah, there's a lot of wide open space here.
Yes, yes. And that was not an insult. It was a statement of fact.
Right.
Right. But they really do get the cities. When they do their cities here, they get them right. The cities are fantastic. And you probably know this, world-class cities, most of the...
Well, yeah, but also I have some very, very good friends and relatives who live in the Toronto area, and rents and electricity are exorbitant, and they are not happy. And I know a ton of young people that can't afford to have an automobile in Toronto.
Did you follow the election results in Ontario tonight?
No, I did not.
The Conservatives just won a huge landslide majority.
That would be good.
They finally got sick and tired of 15-plus years of left-wing bureaucracy and corruption that had caused exactly what you've just described. But that's not my point on tonight's call.
Okay.
My point for tonight's call is I have a lot of friends in Canada myself, and I spend a fair amount of time here. And I don't really – I'm no expert on tariffs. I'm no expert on NAFTA. But I've been listening to a lot of Canadian voices of people I trust on this topic. And I can tell you – I don't care what the left wing in Canada believes about Trump, about what he's been doing, but I certainly am paying attention to what Canadian conservatives, and the Canadian Conservative Party has impressed me. I've been following it for about the last, well, at least 8-9 years. And I can tell you, Canadian conservatives, prominent voices over here, I actually have to apologize to my Canadian friends on behalf of what Trump is doing. It's really... A prominent Canadian conservative voice just played Ronald Reagan in a speech where Ronald Reagan describes someone like a Donald Trump who would do something really stupid like this, start a trade war with a country that has stood by us in the U.S., has fought with us, has bled with us. This is really unfair, and it's really Canadians, but it's also, as they are probably accurately saying, it's going to hurt us. This is not good for anybody. It's just... It makes us look really, really bad.
Well, as we have said all along, Trump has made some great inroads when it comes to economic things, which we said in the beginning of the week, and I stated this is what makes this so stupid. It makes it just so, so stupid. And when you look at the fact that U.S. trade representatives in 2017, we actually have a trade surplus with Canada. Canada and Mexico both reporting, they said, we don't understand the steel tariffs. Because you actually ship more steel to us and we ship to you. Why are you doing this? It seems to make no sense. And there are more people out there getting believing that actually. And by the way, this is no surprise. Trump promoted tariffs when he ran for political office. A lot of people, you know, just poo-pooed it and said, well, that's he'll never do it. He's just threatening to do it. Well, now we're actually where people thought he wouldn't go. But the interesting thing is, Trump will never explain why he does it except in the purest, rawest rhetoric, which really doesn't explain why you're doing something. He talks about he wants fair trade, but doesn't explain what fair trade is. And I'm afraid, and others are afraid, that he actually does not want a free trade agreement, does not believe in free trade, but wants a system much more, much as I started the show off with a much more isolationist America, that these actually aren't the fear is, no, that, and I hope I'm wrong, that the fear is these are not negotiating points, and we've said it's a bad negotiating point to say, I'm going to hurt my own country or injure myself in order to negotiate with you. It sort of does the opposite effect of it if you're hurting your own country. That's not really how you negotiate. I don't know why he believes this way, because he's never explained it. And the fact is, he understands the fact that lowering corporate tax rates is a good thing. He understands that lowering the personal tax rate is a good thing for the economy. He was bragging on Twitter the fact of the money that's going to the government's going to collect from the tariffs now and in the future from Canada and Mexico, which American citizens have to pay. And we have said there's complete confusion here as to what in the world the president is doing or what his mindset is here, or whether there even is a mindset, or whether it's just the emotion that for 40 years he has believed and publicly promoted tariffs. And it doesn't matter whether he's got Larry Kudlow, who joined him from CNBC, who is an absolute free trader. Well, he was until a couple of weeks ago, but joined as an absolute free trader. That, you know, you wonder what's going on. And I know there's been the Wall Street Journal, others reporting screaming and yelling sessions because there is a huge disagreement in the administration about this. But the thing that gets me the most is the president has an absolute responsibility and obligation. When you're going to hurt the pork industry in Iowa, $500 million already, and they now expect that the pork tariffs that are going to be put on by, you know, Mexico could cost another $1 billion to pork producers. Well, when you do this, I believe that you owe a specific explanation to the American public about why you think an economy works this way and what your whole plan is and what you would like to see, and explain what fair trade is. Now, the president did in a tweet yesterday come out and talk about the tariffs that the Canadians have on dairy products. Let's not forget the Canadians also in any free trade agreement. We all pick and choose. Okay, let's protect this over there. They get that little win. We'll protect this over here. Let's get this little win. And dairy products is something that is the Canadians have a protectionist, you know, measure on huge in Canada to keep out American products. But it's also a deal that the U.S. made with them in order to do it. So let's not. I know the conservatives in Canada are against it, just like the true conservatives. The smaller, dwindling number of conservatives in America are also against it, as you see right now in the House and Senate with the proposed pending legislation that would limit the president's power. Because that's the thing that gets to me is the president's using national security. It's got nothing to do with national security, and everybody knows it.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. Did Canada put these dairy tariffs, because I'm not familiar with this, Did Canada put these dairy tariffs on the U.S. in response to Donald Trump's move, or was this...
No. Dairy tariffs have been in effect for a long time.
Okay. So I'm not familiar with that, but I do know, because you asked about what Donald Trump's reasoning could be. Did you hear the reason he gave Justin Trudeau for doing this? Because Justin Trudeau came right out, Prime Minister of Canada.
Don't ask me questions. Tell me what he said, because there's a bunch of things that have been said, so I don't know. Just tell me what he said on this.
What's being reported here in Canada is that, and this is by Canadian conservative sources, Donald Trump simply said, hey, didn't you guys blew up or burned down the White House back in the War of 18?
Yes, no, that was a tweet. Yeah, we talked about that yesterday. He did say that, okay. Yes. It makes no sense. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's a completely useless point. Why the president said that, who knows? You'd have to ask him.
It's also wrong factually, and it's insulting. And I have to apologize again to smart, educated, conservative Canadians for, and by the way, Canadians who supported Donald Trump winning the last election. And now they just don't understand. These are people who already give Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt, but I'm not hearing any conservative Canadians giving Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt on this one. And they're standing with the liberals on what a boneheaded move this is, and it just makes us in the U.S. look really, really bad.
Thanks, Mark. We appreciate the call.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. You know, to the last caller bringing up what happened in Ontario, Canada, yesterday, the province, Doug Ford's center-right progressive conservatives defeated the Ontario Liberals, who have been in power since 2003. Now, he is the brother of Rob Ford. Remember Rob
right.
Ford?
Yeah.
Who died in 2016 of a rare cancer. He has been compared to Trump, but he has voiced support for Trump, though he has made it a clear look. Don't make a direct comparison because there's differences in the way that we think, but it is huge. And yes, I will tell you this because I know I still have relatives, a lot of relatives in Canada. The conservatives in Canada are quite conservative.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks for being here. Welcome to the Friday show. Already getting some response. Donald Trump is not an isolationist. He's just doing what is best for the American people. When we use the term and said there are, for example, Europe and Mexico and Canada, fear that the president does not want any type of free trade deal. He would rather all the free trade deals go away. That's the fear that they have, and therefore they believe he's becoming an that they believe he prefers, and other conservatives in Congress. I don't know where the president stands. I can't tell you. He hasn't explained it to me enough. I know his political rhetoric over the last 35 years on tariffs, but I can't tell you what's in his head on this. It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm simply reporting that others believe not that he's a military or political isolationist, but an economic trade isolationist. For right. example, you know, when you look in the 1930s, when America didn't want to get involved, what was it, a year before we got into World War II, before Pearl Harbor, 90% of Americans didn't want to get involved in the war. Well, in this day and age, we'd be in that war.
Mm-hmm.
Under Trump or whatever, we'd be in that war. That was the political and military isolationism that we had in this country back then. But we also had economic isolationism with the Smoot-Hawley tariffs that came about. So there's a number of different ways of isolationism, but if the president does not want, if he truly in his heart does not want, and I don't know whether this is true or not. This is, again, reporting what others are stating.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a concern? Yeah, I hope I hope they're wrong. But the fact is, when Canada has said, look, putting the five-year sunset on that means we, you know, all industry, United States industry, they want longer than a five-year free trade deal. They don't want to go through this again in 5 years. They want a free trade deal done so there is certainty long term that we know that the supply lines of free trade for the goods and services that we wish to have are solid for a significant portion of the future. And 5 years isn't long enough. That's why that's a no deal for Canada. On the other hand, with Mexico, and that's one of the reasons that Canada believes that the president actually does not want a free trade deal, because he's putting things in that are just a no-go from the start. And the other is on the president wanting in Mexico a $16 an hour minimum wage for some manufacturing jobs in Mexico that are related to building cars. Now, how many that would be, we don't know. Mexico doesn't know the United States doesn't know. But Mexico's like, well, wait a minute. We're not telling you what your wages should be. You're trying to dictate to us what our minimum wage should be, which would be more of a minimum wage than you have in the United States for your manufacturing workers. Mm-hmm. So no, that's a non-starter to begin with. You can take it however you want. Because others believe that he may be an economic isolationist on trade. You don't have to believe that.
Well,
to the responsible person, I guess. You can sit there and say, I don't, go ahead.
If you talk to 100 different people, you're going to get 100 different reasons as to why the president's doing it. The only person we care about is the president in terms of, that's the only person that's going to be able to tell us why he's doing what he's doing.
Right. We have, and
it's not national defense.
It's not national defense. We all know that. That's a lie.
So, administration. So why are you doing it? Make your case.
We have stated we don't know.
I have no idea.
I have no idea what's in the president's head. Now, we have people every day calling in, well, this is what the president's trying to do. Well, he hasn't said that. You're projecting what you think.
Right. You're
the
taking
president
a guess at it.
Is attempting to do. And we've had tons of those calls over the last couple of weeks. Well, here's what he's doing. Well, he hasn't said that.
I don't know. I mean, there was thought that maybe there was something going to be done by G7 or at G7, but apparently that's not the case. So if he's not going to, you know, I mean, if he really is reluctant to go, then the question is, are the tariffs not a negotiation ploy? Because that's another excuse that we got. This is a negotiation tactic. It may be, but we don't know. Because you look to the administration, any administration, to make their case. Where's Larry Kudlow? I mean, if you're taking this kind of action and you're looking to get whatever it is, better deal, we don't even know what that means, but if there is a purpose behind it, the question is, what is that purpose? And Kevin McCarthy, who just might be the next Speaker of the House, the other day he was defending the president, the current speaker, Paul Ryan, defending the tariffs. And Paul Ryan, the outgoing speaker, was against it. Now, you can do the math there. One's not running for re-election. And the other one is quite possibly the next Speaker of the House. So we've heard all the political back and forth on it. The president, the White House, the administration, they have to make their case.
Cecilia Malmstrom had an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal. She is the European Union Trade Commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
And she stated, she goes, let me give you an example. A few days before announcing the steel and aluminum tariffs, the administration said it would investigate a tariff on imported cars that would raise car prices even further. Cars and car parts, by the way.
Right.
These tariffs also have an unpredictable effect because of the complexity of the international manufacturing and trade process. For example, each year, more than 154,000 cars from German brands like Mercedes and BMW are produced at United States plants and then exported to China.
Mm.
If the U.S. raises a tariff on cars imported from the EU, Americans merely begin buying these German cars that otherwise would have been shipped to China. The end result, no American jobs added and an increase in the U.S. trade deficit with China. The real problem, worldwide steel overcapacity and overproduction in countries like China, go unanswered. The U.S. has long been a proponent of international free trade, but its government is now asking other countries to impose quotas on steel and car exports to the United States. These quotas are euphemistically called voluntary export restraints, but they are voluntary only in name. Such quotas are out of line with the workings of a market economy, and they violate all the rules of the World Trade Organization. The Trump administration's stated reason for protecting U.S. steel, aluminum, and cars is national security. That is nonsense. The reason I bring that up is The European Union knows it. The whole world knows it. The Trump White House knows it. It was even brought up. Does Trump really know that it's not a national security issue? And people believe, yes, he does. That's why he's not out explaining it. Because if he could explain it in a tweet, he would.
Right.
And he's not explaining it. Therefore, he knows that they're not telling the American public the truth on that. The European Union has already filed a complaint with the WTO and will exercise its right to compensation. Meanwhile, the U.S. Congress has failed to challenge the legitimacy of the administration's national security claim. Can American institutions be counted on to defend their country's trade ideals? Here it is. Asked about what triggered last week's decision on steel tariffs, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross replied that talks with the European Union were taking too long. In fact, the European Union was creative and flexible in discussions with the U.S. It offered a positive transatlantic trade agenda, including the prospect of an agreement that would have scrapped all tariffs on all industrial products, including cars and car parts, both ways. Our offer was conditioned on the European Union be exempted from U.S. tariffs. We'll have no tariffs on your stuff. You have no tariffs on ours. The offer was confirmed in May by the EU heads of state and government. This opportunity has now been discarded by the U.S. Wait a minute. The European Union saying we wanted to drop all tariffs, both sides. Why wouldn't the president go for it?
You know, it's really is a mystery. I mean, when you throw in the whole comments about or the tweet about the jobs in China being concerned, all of a sudden, I mean, because we went after China, right? Or we threatened to go after China because they weren't playing by the rules of the WTO. They, of course, retaliatory tariffs came very quickly from China. And then you look into it, how many weeks later? 3-4 weeks later, the president tweets out being concerned about jobs in China. There's no one that can explain that to me.
Well, I think that a lot of people are confused, including a lot of very, very loyal Trump supporters, which is why they have called our show and project out what they believe the president is doing. And our response is, well, the president hasn't said that. Well, he's got to be thinking this because why else would he do it? Well, then he should be stating it as you are.
Well, and if you're they're trying to apply their logic to him, explain that when you include that tweet about ZTE and jobs in China.
Right.
Because it is all over. That was just bizarre. That was just odd. I mean, it wasn't even Trump-like.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, I was waiting for him to come out the day later and say, I didn't tweet that. One of my staff did.
Or I was hacked or something.
Right.
Because that was not even Trump-like. I know the unpredictable nature of this president. That wasn't unpredictable. That was just odd.
That was bizarre.
Yeah.
That really was.
And so, we don't know what he's trying to accomplish here.
Right. Well, I'm just reporting what the other countries are stating. I don't know what Trump is doing. I cannot get in his head on this one at all.
No, I cannot
connect the dots economically as to what his mindset is as to what he wants in a better trade deal. We hear fair trade. He doesn't explain what it is. If the European Union has said we'll drop all tariffs, if you drop all tariffs and the United States says no, then what's up? Unless the European Union Commissioner of Trade, who says, look, you can verify it with all of the, you know, as she said, you can verify it with the leaders of the European Union governments because they know the offer was made and that the United States said no. Unless she's lying, somebody explain that.
Right.
And that's the question. That's the fear that Trump really doesn't want a free trade deal, that he's much more of an economic trade isolationist, which means he believes that the U.S. should be supplying the U.S.
Yeah.
Well, the reality is, and the U.S. doesn't have the market of 7 billion people to attempt to also service because we'll be locked out of those markets.
Mm-hmm.
We can only go with the information that we have. Blind loyalty, blind faith in any politician has never been what we're about.
Well,
we question everything.
And it certainly doesn't work with this president. I mean, I don't think he's... When has he ever been afraid to talk about and promote, you know, anything that he believes? We know he talks about tariffs and has for decades, but the question is, what is your goal here? Make your case to the American people.
And he won't do it except in, well, the usual political rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
Things like fair trade.
Right.
And everybody
and
jumps.
Better deal. Okay.
Better deal. What is that better deal?
Right. Explain
what are
that.
You trying to get? We would think that that is something that we are owed as citizens of America when it comes to the policy of free trade and free markets.
Right. Because if it's a good thing, and I think the president thinks it's a good thing.
Oh, so do I.
Then it should be no problem.
In his mind, I think he thinks he's doing the right thing for the American
right.
people.
Sure.
Well, then explain it.
Right. Promote it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on wellness. Eating healthy while on the road doesn't have to be difficult. Before your trip, stock up with healthy alternatives like fresh fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and nuts. Avoid junk food. Be creative as you prepare your main entrees. Look for quick, easy, and healthy recipes that you can make in your sleeper berth's microwave. When eating out, look for healthy choices. Even fast food chains have salads and other light menu items to select from. Avoid unnecessary calories. Give up sugary drinks like soda and juice. Replace them with water. And don't eat out of boredom. Healthy eating is a matter of choice and acting on it. This tip brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us on jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Philip in Honolulu. Philip, welcome. Thanks for calling.
Wow, I'm surprised it got through so quickly.
Well, we decided
to take my call.
Well, we'd rather go to Hawaii than anywhere else.
Yeah, sure. A lot of truckers out here, right?
Exactly.
40 miles straight wide. Okay, so I was just thinking to myself, you know, when I do a deal, this guy Trump, you know, our president. God bless him. He's getting ready to have everybody who he wants to do a deal with in the same room together like 4 days from now. Why would you not pump up the negativity of it so that you could just walk in and then you could release some of the pressure off of it and everybody else who thinks that they're going to get a better deal, you actually walk away with a better deal. I mean, like, for example, you know.
That's not the point, because we know the specifics of what that's leaking out, what's actually in the trade deals that Canada and Mexico and the European Union are against. We just gave you
from the
European Union. We're talking about what does Trump think. I don't know his economic philosophy on trade. I think as an American citizen, we should know what he thinks, and that's why I asked the question. If the European Union offered to drop all their tariffs on all industrial products, if the U.S. would do the same, that's absolutely free trade. Nobody has an advantage. They're a westernized civilization, modern Western civilization. So are we. If they drop all the tariffs and the United States says no, then what does Trump want?
Correct, and I heard you say that earlier, but are you sure that that's exactly what the deal was? Because that's just a leak.
Well, no. What I said is, if she's lying and she said, look, you can, if you don't believe me, you can ask the information. All the heads of state of all the European countries know that this deal was made. And I said, if she's lying, then that blows that out of the water. But if she's not lying,
the question is,
because I'm framing these all in questions because I don't know. Then if they've offered to drop all their industrial tariffs on everything, and they said on the condition that you do the same thing, and the president says no, then I think the next question is, what does the president want?
Yeah, right. Okay, I see what you're saying.
I think that's a fair question.
I can't believe. Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay.
I mean, of course, if they were to drop every tariff, why would he not take that? I mean, that almost seems like it's not real, because that would just make perfectly good sense. Because then it would be a free trade like we would all would like to have. But I can't believe that they're going to drop every tariff they have. It just seems like it's a little too good to believe.
Well, it could be that it's false, that she misstated this or whatever the case is. But if she's lying, like Gary said, that blows everything out of the water.
But if she's not, then the question is, what do we want? And I think the American people deserve an answer. Well, what does the administration...
The drinking game continues. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, you know, to the last caller who talked about, you know, if the European Union did make that deal to the United States, that it would seem to make sense because that's what you want in free trade. I need to mention that the president's tweet last week let us know where he stands. He believes in fair trade, not free trade. What does that mean?
Right. Define fair.
Define fair. You can identify what free trade is.
Mm-hmm.
You can trade with whoever you want, wherever you want.
One party does not decide fair. Two.
Right.
They decide fair. So... something that benefits the U.S. to a greater degree. Okay?
How?
What? Details.
And how is it a benefit to the United States?
Right.
And when you talk about economic philosophy, economic reality, you have to be able to explain that, we believe, or you have an obligation. When you start deciding, I'm going to help this business, and at the same time, I'm going to help this American business, but while doing it, I will hurt this American business over here, mm-hmm. That deserves a specific allegation from the President of the United States, in our very, very humble opinion.
Right. Well, and if we're concerned about China not playing by the WTO rules, yet we're claiming national defense... national security reasons for our tariffs, which is not the truth, and everybody knows it. Because that would be that's the one walk or exemption that any president can use in the WTO rules. Well, if we were at war, aside from and the war on terror does not present a threat. Not at this point, it doesn't.
Well, the whole point is China's not abiding by the WTO rules. Mm-hmm. Well, right now, neither is the United States.
And that's my point. So we start this whole mess, and politically, you get that win with China. Yeah, great, go after them. They should get in line. Remember, Kudlow, his idea was we get all the trade partners from the other trade partners of China. We put pressure on them to put pressure on China and to get them in line. And the World Trade Organization, you know, enforces that in terms of intellectual property. But now we're not playing by the WTO rules. So if we're the crown jewel for every trade, country that does trade, and that's pretty much all of them, but those major countries, then shouldn't we be playing by that rule? If we're accusing China are doing something, then we impose tariffs. Shouldn't it be on the up and up? I mean, the president would have to go through the administration, the U.S. would have to go through that process with the WTO. But that's the reason that excuse is being used. Because they think they can get away with it. But now Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, says they're not going to, yesterday he was saying they're not going to pass a rule or pass a law that the president won't sign in terms of blocking the president. And that was supposed to be, Corker was trying to put that in as a clause on the defense authorization. You and I were having the discussion, all right, is there a veto-proof majority here on Capitol Hill if it's attached to defense authorization?
And in all,
and it may not be.
And no, there wouldn't be, because Democrats, you notice Democrats, except maybe Bernie Sanders, completely quiet on this. Why?
Right. They're sitting on their hands because they know it will be damaging if it starts to hurt the economy.
If it starts to hurt the economy, they want it to happen. Mm-hmm. That's why they're sitting on the sidelines. That's why they're not taking a position on this.
Right. They're colluding with the Canadians to influence the election.
Let's go to Jerry in San Antonio. Jerry, you're on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, this is just my opinion, and I'm a truck driver, so take it for what it's worth.
Yes.
Let's look at the whole national security thing. We just had $700 million allocated to our military, but we've got no way of building what needs to be built. Can't make the ammunition that needs to be made. We go back to D-Day, which we celebrated just yesterday. You know, within a couple of months, we had built thousands of planes and hundreds of ships ready for battle. In a heartbeat, I mean, we had that capacity to do that. Today, we can't do that. We have nothing to even compare to that. I think what he's trying to do is he's trying to force these companies back home.
Hold it. Don't rewrite history, Jerry. We didn't have the potential. We didn't have the potential to produce it immediately. We had to turn over our manufacturing plants, our automobile plants, everything went on hold, and they produced military equipment. We absolutely
have. I wasn't trying to rewrite history.
Well, we absolutely have. We absolutely have the ability to do that right now. Using the same method, we would have the ability to do that today.
Like I said, it's just a truck driver's opinion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't say it's just a truck driver's opinion. We quashed that a long time ago, whether you're a truck driver or janitor or whatever. You can have an opinion that's totally solid because of your profession does not give you better credibility on your opinion or lesser credibility on your opinion.
And I'll say this. I mean, professional drivers know about the economy, know about trade, too. Remember a few years back when trucking slowed down, that was as a result of factory output slowing down. Our trade partners... We're not buying as much from the U.S. And so when that happens, you can bet trucking's going to slow. If this escalates to that point, trucking will be hurt by it as well.
I agree. Yeah. You don't misunderstand me. I'm not agreeing with what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to understand.
Trying to get in his head. We're with you. Jerry. Anybody's guess is as good as anyone else's until the president makes it clear, right?
Exactly.
And that's why we said. And thank you, Jerry. We appreciate the call.
Thanks,
drive safe. It's really up to the administration. But ask yourself, for everyone who has supported the president, when was he afraid to promote something that he believes is a positive? And what's the longest standing, I guess, issue or position could well be tariffs with this particular president. And going way back to when Bill Clinton was in a law firm, maybe still in law school. I mean, it goes way, 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 way back, early 80s. And we talked about how this president's been a household name forever. Well, those discussions, these were the shows on Donahue or anywhere else when he would be interviewed and talk about tariffs. He's been talking about this for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So ask yourself, why is he not making a very clear case about how he wants it to work, what he expects from all this?
Yeah, just so you let you know, there's a, especially on this show, there's a little when anybody says, well, you know, I only do this where I'm a blue-collar worker.
Mm-hmm.
Both of us came from blue-collar backgrounds.
Right.
You know, when we talk about steel, for example, and people say, you know, I'll get this and people say, what do you know? Well, I used to be a United Steel worker.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't give me any more or any less credibility on talking about steel tariffs. It's the substance of the argument.
Right.
Doesn't matter what your profession is. So we always get irked when people, we think, are putting themselves or their opinion down based on their profession. You have the ability to understand anything that these idiots in Washington are doing or the idiots here are talking about.
Sure.
Overnight.
Well, because you're affected by it, and you know, when you're a part of an industry, whether it's trucking or any other industry, manufacturing, I mean, you know what government overreach has done. You know, I mean, that's been in play for a long, long time. The question is this what we want for our economy? When those factory orders slowed in part of 2013 into 2014, and then you started seeing transportation slow down because our trade partners were ordering less. And when they ordered less, again, you're not, you know, carrying that stuff, hauling that freight to the ports. It's going to affect transportation. That's the name of the game. So if we're going to close our doors on trade, if that is where the president's going, then expect a lot of industry to be hurt by it. Because you have to ask yourself, all right, when a trade partner buys an item from our factories, you know, well, if there's a tariff, a retaliatory tariff, and those were fairly quick, by the way, our trade partners know, and now there's pressure on Prime Minister Abe from Japan to get in and impose some tariffs against the U.S. So they're going to do that. We're going to ramp it up. Then they're going to ramp it up. Then they're to what end? So if the president is trying to isolate the U.S. and we'll just make everything here and we'll all be better off for it, don't think that's going to be the case. Don't just jump into that and believe that that's how it's going to work. Our expansion of wealth in modern times, a lot of that has to do with the fact that our manufacturers can sell to the world, that their base, their customer base is a potential of billions of people and not 320 million. That's very simple math.
Let's go to David in Fort Lauderdale. David, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. First time that I've gotten through. My concern has been the intensity you guys are kind of showing against Trump because he's not disclosing anything other than that he's doing this for security reasons. Well, when we're dealing with the kinds of countries and the kinds of leaders, and many of them communists and socialists and snakes from the deepest, we've got to be careful. I guess you could qualify it as a
he's not making type that of, he's not making the point that you're making, Dave.
Well, the thing that. No, I know he's not. It doesn't sound like it, but deep down, we've got a lot of enemies, and we can't start trusting these people because we've never been able to trust some of them.
If you can't trust Canada and you can't trust anybody, that means all industry must be produced in the United States, servicing our own customers and therefore that shuts us out of the world market and our economy collapses. How does that benefit us?
We have to be wise. We have to be wise.
What does that mean?
What does that mean? What does that mean?
Necessarily shut it off.
What does that mean?
I don't know yet. I don't know. But that's have to be wise. You and me have to be
Dave,
wise.
Dave, that's our point. That's our point. President. That's our point.
Yeah, but you're making it way too much, and it makes me nervous.
What's way too much?
Why are you... Well, that's all you talk about lately.
Well, that's and because... I, well, that's
I'm
because
America first.
Well, because...
America
and so are we.
Sure. Dave, sure.
See, and again, sure. don't... David, thanks, stop, Dave. Stop with the Bubba mentality, first off. I'm for America and you're not. No, we're doing this because we're for America.
Yeah.
We believe that Donald Trump thinks this is for America, too.
Sure.
Economically speaking, that's not the case. Well, you guys are talking about it too much. We get that all the time. Well, that's because the president is.
Well, and because this weekend is where everyone is pointing to for the G7 summit, which is all about economics. But I mean, I know the liberal countries want it to be about the environment.
But stop with the Bubba, I'm a patriot, you're not. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley. I'm Gary McNamara. And just to the last caller who brought up patriotism, you might want to ask the president then why he came out with the tweet concerned about Chinese jobs a few weeks ago.
Right. That's why we look at this entire equation and the back and forth, and none of this adds up. None of it
right.
does.
And we talk about the economics of it, not the patriotism of it, because we believe the president is a patriot. We just understand economics.
Mm-hmm.
You see the council, the President's Council of Economic Advisors report that has come out that's now going through that the tariffs are going to hurt economic growth, as we have said. So we believe they're going to hurt economic growth in sectors of the economy. The president should explain what they are specifically doing wrong and how we will solve that problem and make it right, not just in tweets.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thanks for being here. How's everybody doing? Washington Capitals winning...
Hey,
Stanley Cup.
Yay. Go Capitals.
Let's talk quickly before we get back to your calls and comments on paternity leave for new pet parents.
Paternity. I was thinking you said that weird, but no. Paternity. The
paternity.
The parents of dogs, of pets.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Apparently a Nordic company.
Uh-huh.
All right. A pet supply company says it's important to have a chance to bond with one's new pet, so they're going to be giving, this is a pet food company based in Norway, Sweden, and Finland, is going to give its employees 3 days for paternity leave when a pet is...
When you get a new pet.
So you can bond with your new pet. So we believe that this will eventually become something that Bernie Sanders will propose.
And he'll win because of this one thing.
Well, we had talked about pet health insurance in 2016.
Yes.
If you truly wanted to win, just offer Medicare for pets.
Right. The Affordable
or Pet-A-Care.
Cat and Canine Act.
Yes.
That's what we support. And we said, look, you want to win, you'll get all the Facebook votes. According to my Facebook feed.
Now, I'm trying to see, is this paternity leave, is it paid or...
Well, they send you home without pay. That would be funny.
Well, remember, initially, personal leave was mm-hmm. not paid.
Right.
I would assume it would be,
because if you're promoting a benefit...
Right, if the company's doing it, they're paying you for
yeah.
it. Right.
Yeah.
Now, they are a pet supply company.
Yeah, it's goodwill, it's good promotion, it's good... you know, feel good. But listen, that's for them. That's great. But how long before a politician says that? By the way, we thought we were the geniuses, and then someone pointed out that they had come up with a affordable. What was it? It was called something else, but basically it was going to be government paid insurance or something for your pet, you know, several years ago. It went nowhere, but that'll be next, you know, $1,000 credit. And then Mike Lee and Rubio will take it up to $2,000, you know, a fully refundable credit.
You have to be paying attention to understand my laugh on that one. That goes back to the child tax credit.
Yes, yes. All of a sudden, the so-called conservatives of yesterday, you know, doubling the child tax credit, and the refundable portion of the child tax credit, and then so we'll have the pet tax credit. Man. You could get rich. Cat lady would be very wealthy. yeah. Just wait for it. Somebody will say it one day. You know, they're already talking about, you know, it was actually Ivanka Trump. One of her core issues was reimbursement or credit, tax credit or something for daycare, child care expenses. So, now it never came to fruition, or hasn't yet, but it was one of the ideas being talked about in 2016, and that's one of her ideas. And she was trying to appeal to the president to get it done. It's the candidate at the time, her dad. Nothing has come up in that regard. I can't see that happening, but maybe Marco Rubio and Mike Lee make it happen. Who knows? If you're going to double the child tax credit, then I could also see them going for a credit on child care, on daycare expenses. So.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, if the point being is that if Rubio and Lee were pushing for doubling the refundable child tax credit, certainly you'd have to be for this as well, right?
I would think so.
Yeah. You're trying to appeal to your base.
All right. I just thought.
Yeah.
Want to go to calls?
I don't know. I don't know any of these people that are on hold. So I can't answer that question.
Okay. Let's go to Don in California about the G7 coming up and tariff talk and all that. Don, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi.
Hi, Gary, Eric. I truly enjoy your repartee. It's very informed, and I just want to say paternity. Well,
yes,
I love dogs, and I train them, but pets aren't for everybody. Mm. But I just want to say that I don't like complaining unless it's on purpose, but I sure as heck would like to hear what Mr. Kudlow has to say over Giuliani. As far as looking out for his boss, I really would like to see Mr. Kudlow speak out on what trade goals are and maybe give some cover for his boss.
Well, I mean, it would be because that I would accept. I don't, you know, expect the president necessarily to come out and promote it. The difference, too, is that in the past, Don, you have had any of the official surrogates for the White House, for the president, make a statement, and then the president would contradict it on Twitter or something the following day or later that day. And so there's that risk. But I'm with you. I would love to hear it, especially from Larry Kudlow's mouth, because he's not a tariff guy. And we got his position. We know his position on China. And that you put the pressure on China. I understand that. But this latest round, he hasn't been out there promoting it like he was a number of things when he first went joined.
Well, look, as we said, Kudlow's opinion in the since he's joined the president. I mean, he just spoke again yesterday. Don't blame Trump. Blame the nations that have broken away from fair trade practices. The global trade system is broken, and President Trump is trying to fix it. And that's the key point. As we have said, tell us the specifics.
Right. Make the case.
Right. If anybody,
and I think that's what you're saying, Don. Make the case.
Larry Kudlow, make the case besides just the rhetoric.
Define fair.
Yeah. Define what fair
is. There was that. There it is. The fair trade. What is it?
Right. Well, because tell me the last time that Kudlow on CNBC was talking about fair trade.
Right. He's a free trader.
I can't remember.
I know.
Yeah. And that's, we said, it was, I guess, maybe a week ago or so. We said, look, what would Kudlow say if he were still on CNBC? We could probably find some clips and play them, and we could hear them, because we know for years where he stood. So the question being, what is the goal, and how do you, for Kudlow himself, and I think that's your point too, Don, what is the goal, and tell us what fair means. That's what we want to know.
Well, here's an interesting one. Kudlow says, I have no doubt the United States and Canada will remain firm friends. These are quotes. The White House economic advisor also denied reports that Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin pushed for a tariff exemption for Canada during a meeting this week.
Right.
Kudlow said both he and the Treasury Secretary attended the meeting and did not say a word.
Wow. Yeah.
He believes the rest of the world agrees with Trump about Chinese trade practices. That's not the question.
This is not about China.
Not about China.
We get it on China. We're talking about the friendly nations here. That's the question. Where do you stand? How does this all work? Define fair. I mean, they have to make the case. This is the idea of putting someone like Larry Kudlow out there. He's obviously got media savvy, but the whole... his whole position at the White House, he should be making the case right now for the president. And he's just repeating, basically, what the president is saying.
And look, when they hired Kudlow, if you listen to the show, you know I said he just hired me. Because, you know, Kudlow, I've seen enough where I know where Kudlow stands on free trade. And he wants others to abide by the rules and regulations, too, like in China. And we've all known there's been problems with China, especially on stealing or requiring technology that in essence is stealing it, high-tech technology. So we agree on that. But when he hired Kudlow, I say he hired me. That's a good sign. Mm-hmm. That was a good sign for me. And now Kudlow is saying things he would have never said just, well, a day before he became the president's chief economic advisor.
Right.
And so you're wondering if he's in there hoping that the president sees, for example, it came out yesterday that the survey was done, or the study was done by the White House economic advisors, and they found out, and they won't talk about it, but it was leaked out that the report says that the tariffs are going to hurt economic growth this year up to 0.15% because the tariffs are going to hurt economic growth. And we've always said, well, that's the only thing that can happen with tariffs. If you raise the cost of doing business, you cannot improve an economy. That's impossible. That's not an opinion. Right. That's economics.
Right.
It's how people respond to incentive and disincentive. So nobody in the White House, not even the conservative economic advisors, when asked yesterday about the report, were willing to talk about it at all. And normally when these reports come out from the White House Council of Economic Advisors, they're made public. This was not. So I guess my question would be, is Larry Kudlow biding his time where enough evidence comes out to the president where then he makes his point and says, Mr. President, you've got to drop these things against Canada and Mexico and the European Union. You know, you're going to hurt your own reelection chances and the Republicans. I don't know. I can't tell you. That's just a question that I have, knowing where Larry Kudlow stands on tariffs.
Right. Yep. Thank you.
Maybe it comes down to the free trade is for the marketplace, and fair trade is government's place in the market.
Yeah. Again, they just have to define that word first.
Well, but the problem is it's when the two intermingle, is it not?
Yes.
Well, because then let's just say that the U.S. and Canada came to an agreement, and that's, you know, it takes two parties to define fair, right? Agree. When they agree, then they have basically said, okay, this is the best deal we can get, then that's the closest you'll ever get to defining that word fair. But it takes both parties. The problem there is, and thank you, Don, for the call, it is involving private sector. You're involving, this is why Ron Paul was against managed trade. He was an open free trader. And he doesn't want those the governments setting the rules. If I'm a manufacturer in Omaha, I should be able to sell to any nation that I want to anybody in any nation, any customer that I want to. So I don't need the government to tell me who I can sell my products to and what they can charge and can't charge and all of that. But you see the situation now, and it's not just managed, it's overly managed. We'll control it. But what you're really doing, it's not the U.S. you're controlling. These aren't federal factories. This is the private sector. That's what this is. And it's ridiculous to think that the government can tell any given business or business as a whole, an entire industry, what's good and what isn't good and what has to be charged and what can't be charged. Get out of the way.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to John in Riverside, California. John, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, tariffs don't work, then why does Europe and Canada and various countries use them against us? It supports their industries, right?
As we have talked about before many, many times, it's dumb when countries do that, but they do that to protect a specific market. They protect that market while hurting all other markets that rely on that particular good or service. For example, already this year, steel prices have gone up 40% before we even enacted the steel tariffs on Canada and Mexico and the European Union.
On top of that, you're describing, John, socialist nations. We know what they will do. We understand what they will do. We're not them.
No, but it's a working process where they protect industries that they want to support.
No, they pretend to protect industry while hurting other industries.
Let me, for example, look at this.
No.
We all the steel tariffs are not a national security issue. Everybody knows that.
We don't produce enough steel.
Right. The what?
How much steel we get? We get Canada, Mexico.
Right.
South Korea and Brazil.
We produce, moving on, up to 75% of our own steel for our own use in America right now. That's what we were focused.
Why would the prices skyrocket? If we got 75% of our own steel, raising it from those other countries only forces them to lower their prices. They're not going to shut down their steel industry.
Apparently, what John wishes the market to do is not what the market has done. It doesn't matter what I wish the market to do or you wish it or expect it to do. It's how they in the business respond to incentive and disincentive. It's up 40%. If you want to see another situation, just the fact of the steel and aluminum tariffs being talked about, the pork industry in Iowa has lost $500 million in potential profits and revenue because they knew. Because the president was talking about it, they believed it could, the world believed it could happen. Therefore, they had to get rid of their pork because they believed, just as happened, Mexico would put a tariff on pork. So they had to get rid of it domestically and worldwide. So actually, the price of pork went down.
Because they had to sell the stock.
Because they had to sell it to get rid of it, which means the American pork producers took a $500 million hit in the state of Iowa.
And then what happens when they have to adjust production, and they will, that will then go back to higher prices. So there is no win.
Never recover.
There is no win here.
We're asking where's
the positive?
We understand when you do it for national, if it's truly for example, the high tech and national security with China, that makes sense. Doesn't make any sense with the European Union. Doesn't make any sense with Canada or even Mexico, where you have a free trade agreement with that. If you wish to change, you can go through the process of changing. And sometimes it takes a couple of years to do it.
And that's the thing.
So with the reaction of the steel market, and if it's 75% domestic steel, they're raising their prices because they know they can raise their prices.
Well, yeah, that's the whole idea. Change. If you're protecting them, it's because they're doing badly. They're going to raise their prices. That's the idea. 866-90-RED-EYE for Omnitracs. Here's your forecast.
Most of the nation's rainfall today will be from I-29 on the eastern edge of North and South Dakota and Nebraska over to I-75. The heaviest rain will be located in northeastern Missouri, southeastern Iowa, as well as central Illinois and Indiana. And we could see severe thunderstorms possible from the front range of the northern central Rockies into the central plains and mid-Mississippi Valley for the next several days. Weather for Saturday's Belmont Stakes, a 50-50 chance of rain outside New York City. But back to today, Washington, D.C. will be sunny and 86 tomorrow and Sunday showers. Atlanta, pop-up storms, high 90. New Orleans, sunny 93. Clear in Dallas, 96. Denver, 95 today, 96 tomorrow. On Sunday, 97, we'll be back to 87 degrees in the Mile High City, but not until Monday. And there's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. I was just looking through some information for the last caller. I think steel revenue is roughly about $86 billion a year. Steel production revenue. The industry that uses steel in the country responsible for $1 trillion in revenue a year. So that's why when we talk about it, when you skyrocket the cost of steel, you affect a much bigger part of the economy. And the other thing is when we talk about Larry Kudlow, a lot of people may not understand that Larry Kudlow. You may not know who Larry Kudlow is. Worked for CNBC for years. Is an absolute free trader. When the president picked him a few months ago to be basically his chief economic advisor, we said that's a great move. It was a very positive move. We said, oh, good, the president's probably moving away from tariffs. And so when we just talked about in the last segment or two segments ago, the fact that Larry Kudlow was on promoting, well, don't blame the president for this. It's important to understand where Larry Kudlow stood just weeks before he decided to join the administration. Steel and aluminum may win in the short term, but steel and aluminum users and consumers lose. One of the ironies of trade protectionism is the tariffs and import quotas and what they do and what we do to ourselves in times of peace. And what foreign nations do to us with blockades to keep imports from entering our country in the time of war. Or consider that we impose sanctions on U.S. enemies such as North Korea, Russia, and Iran because we want them to feel the economic pain of being deprived of imports. but now we are imposing sanctions on our own country. By the way, written together by Larry Kudlow, Arthur Laffer, and Stephen Moore. Stephen Moore, the former campaign advisor, economic advisor for President Trump. It's very important to understand. And as we all know now, Larry Kudlow, chief economic advisor for President Trump. But now we are imposing sanctions on our own country. He wrote this before he became it. This is when they were first proposing it. Putting up tariffs supposedly to make Americans more prosperous. If there ever were a crisis of logic, this is it. President Donald Trump genuinely believes that his steel and aluminum tariffs will save thousands of blue-collar jobs. And we know from our interactions with him that he truly cares about the workers in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and other Rust Belt cities. We do, too. We don't want our factories to shut down. But even if the tariffs save every one of the 140,000 or so steel jobs in America, they put at risk 5 million jobs in industries that use steel. These producers now have to compete in a hyper-competitive international market using steel that is 20% above the world price and aluminum that is 7 to 10% higher than the price paid by our foreign rivals. Steel and aluminum may win in the short term, but steel and aluminum users and consumers lose. Tariffs are tax hikes. Since so many things in American in the American marketplace today are made of steel and aluminum, a 25% tariff on these commodities may get passed on to the consumers at the cash register. This is a regressive tax on low-income families. Meanwhile, up to 5 million jobs will be put in harm's way. And if U.S. steel and aluminum-using industries sell less to foreigners, the trade deficit goes up, not down. Trump should also examine the historical record of tariffs. If he does, he'll see they almost never have worked as intended and have almost always delivered an unhappy ending. It goes into the Smoot-Hawley tariffs of 1929, trying to save the color TV industry. And he said, we aren't persuaded by the Trump administration's claim that we need to impose these tariffs for national security reasons. Despite stiff competition from imports, many specialty steel producers are just doing fine and are actually exporting steel to Mexico and Canada. Meanwhile, Canada is the number one exporter of steel to the United States. Does anyone really believe that Canada is a national security threat? So it's important to know that the president's chief economic advisor is completely against what the president is doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he has no credibility when he goes out and tries to speak in favor of the tariffs.
Right.
For the president, he has no credibility because the internet exists. You know what Larry Kudlow believes.
Yes. It is not a secret. It never has been. That's the whole point of broadcasting. Maybe the president was just trying to drain the CNBC swamp. I don't know. But the it's now on Larry Kudlow in his current position to go and explain. Don't mimic the president. Explain it.
Right. Explain why.
You're the chief economic advisor. And for Larry Kudlow, it shouldn't be a problem. Aside from the whole hypocrisy thing. I mean, there's that. But it's not hard to make the case. The president believes it's best for the country. Explain. Details.
Let's go to Michael in Ontario, California. Michael, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hold on a second. Wait a minute. We got wrong Michael. Here we go.
Michael in Ontario, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome.
All right. Thank you. I'd just like to make the point, or try to make the point, of the difference between fair trade and free trade. When I hear free trade, what I really hear is free labor. And what I think it's become is an entitlement program for the capitalist class to basically abandon the country that made them fame and fortune and scour the planet for the cheapest labor they can find and then ship the product back into here with no tariffs. They don't pay their taxes here. They don't pay the labor. You know, it's like you're hurting the the middle class in America by having implementing this laissez-faire, everything goes big, eat the small, free trade policy. And fair trade, to me, is it protects labor. You know.
Well, it protects labor until the business drops because the cost goes up of that product.
Well,
it certainly the tariffs certainly didn't protect the pork producers.
No,
the tariffs didn't aren't protecting the $1 trillion of the economy that now has to pay 40% more for the price of steel. They're not being protected.
Short term, there's going to be small groups that will be protected. Retaliatory tariffs will change that.
Well, I think really we need to think outside the box a little bit. To me, it's not a matter of imposing tariffs. I think there should be a global minimum wage.
Well, again,
wow.
A
global minimum wage. Who would enforce
maybe we
that?
Shouldn't have free trade. It,
who
we
would enforce
have
that?
That exploit their labor.
Who would enforce that?
Yeah.
Well, I the way you would enforce it would be like what Trump is saying with increasing the manufacturers down in Mexico. He was saying they were going to be required to pay $16 an hour to the workers in
the
factory.
Yet the U.S. doesn't.
Product into America.
Yet the U.S. doesn't have a minimum amount.
That's not a minimum wage, really, because in America.
Well, it would be the U.S. imposing essentially a minimum wage for that job. That's the whole idea.
It's not really a minimum wage because we pay our own people $30, $40, $50 an hour for that $16 hour job.
No, we don't.
You might.
No, we don't.
Not across the board.
No, we don't.
He's only talking about the manufacturing.
No, we don't. I know that for a fact. I'm a former machinist. I got tons of machinist friends out there that are making $11, $12 an hour working machines that have 20, 30 years experience up in the Northeast. All manufacturing jobs do not pay that in the United States. I know that for a fact.
Not all manufacturing jobs, but the ones that make cars do.
No, the subcontractors do not. Remember, there isn't. That's my whole point. Then should Mexico then demand that all subcontractors? Because I can tell you, I can point out the number of people that I know that are machinists right now that are making $10, $11, $12 an hour and are making parts for automobile plants. They're not making $16 an hour. So should Mexico then put a minimum wage on manufacturers in the United States too?
I doubt if look at it. We should. You can make $5,
but that's fair trade. You want fair trade?
Well,
like either you want fair trade, Michael, or you
if
don't want fair trade.
If there was a $3 an hour minimum wage in Mexico, at least they could make $30.
What's the cost of living in Mexico?
Yeah.
Well, come on, $5 a day. I don't care what the cost of living is.
Well, actually, you do. You actually do because it's about their economy. It is about the economy of other nations, Michael. This is why California has the highest poverty rate. It's not about what you make. It's about what you make in relation to what the cost of living is.
I'm just trying to say the more purchasing power you put in the hands of the working class, all they're going to do is purchase things.
Again, you're only looking at one side of it. You're only looking at what somebody makes and not what they have to spend. California has the highest poverty rate. Yes, California has one of the highest income rates. Why is that? Because when they take into consideration the combination of the income plus the cost of living, you're better making less money in a different state because the cost of living is so much lower. You're only looking at one side of the equation, what somebody makes. You're ignoring and completely ignoring the equation of what somebody has to pay for goods and services.
And when you're the whole idea is to eliminate foreign competition, which is competition in the marketplace.
Right. And so
when you're eliminating competition, you're not giving them spending power. You're not giving them more spending power. You're giving them less spending power. If the price of goods goes up and their wages go up, tell me where the win is.
Well, we have to realize is a third of our economy is exports. Mm-hmm. So the fact is, if you say that, okay, we need to have an even playing field, then there would be no reason for any U.S. manufacturer. Hypothetically, fair trade would mean that everything is equal. Therefore, there's no need to go to a different country to do it. Therefore, you can make everything in the United States here.
Right. Look, well, then, I would love
then,
to see.
Well, then if that's the case, then everybody else has the same idea. And therefore, there is no worldwide competition. Therefore, prices stay a lot higher. They don't go down. You can't have an expansive economy because your population isn't going up as it has, before in our history. Mm-hmm. But the population of the world, a market of 7 billion, is a lot greater than 320 million. And you lose that. And therefore, there are less job opportunities and the cost of goods and services are much higher.
I would love to see the economy of a Mexico improve to the effect that their wages were rising at an exponential rate, and that the cartels didn't have so much, that as a separate point, control over their country, because it would pretty much end illegal immigration for the most part.
By the way,
the draw. To the U.S. is the better paying job. But keep in mind, they're sending most of that money back to Mexico. That's the whole point. Cost of living here is also much higher.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Eric, you just brought up a great point when you talked about, for example, that the one of the things that the U.S. wants to require is some manufacturers, depending on the percentage of where the parts are made, wants Mexican manufacturers to be paying their workers $16 an hour. Mm-hmm. I guess that would be American, which would be a huge increase because, as we know, the cost of living is a lot lower there.
Mm-hmm.
My point was simply because he made it sound like all, manufacturers make $30, $40, $50 an hour. I'll tell you right now, I know especially up north in the industrial cities, for example, where there's a ton of overload of still old machinists in Cleveland, Detroit, Buffalo, things like that. I can tell you, I know machinists that have quit the business and gone to work at Walmart. Because Walmart's paying more.
Mm-hmm.
So, in essence, we asked the caller and said, well, then, should Mexico require that anybody involved in machining or manufacturing anything for automobiles in the United States, any subcontractor, any small machine shop, should be paying $40 or $50 an hour to equalize it because we should care about the manufacturer in the United States, too? Is the president pushing for that?
Right. Well, so, I mean, and to what end?
No, well,
the measures will go back and forth.
Right.
And where does it, because, this report that says that, well, it's going to hurt the economy, what that report can't tell you, and no one can tell you, is what retaliatory measures are still going to happen, which ones will happen in the future, and how big will they be?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.